Christine Kraft, and I'm so delighted that Brad Friedman is on the line with me from Los Angeles. And guess what else, Brad?
What else?
Deborah Bowen is on the line also. Shall we bring her into this conversation?
Deborah Bowen, I've heard of her.
Yes, I think she's a senator or something. I'm
something
not sure.
Something like that. Yeah.
Hello, Senator Bowen. How are you, Senator Bowen?
Hello.
Well, we're so glad you're with us. I've got Brad Friedman on the other line.
I've been listening. I thought we might talk a little bit about hack tests.
Please, tell us what. I know that got a little contentious the other day. You're so good at asking wonderful, probing questions, and not in a nasty, hostile way, but in an appropriate way.
But and I didn't get an answer.
I know that. What happened?
I don't know. I'm going to have to get the tape and watch it again because I think that I asked the same question four or five times and still didn't get an answer.
I know. And the question essentially was, have you done the Bruce McPherson apparently told the Bee and others that he was going to allow Mr. Hursty to do a Diebold hack test and it would be no problem? And then what? Apparently they couldn't agree or Diebold wouldn't agree to which machine should be tested or some such. We're not sure what the reason was that he said he was going to do it and then didn't.
Yeah, well, the last I got was from the undersecretary who just said that, well, the point of it was to determine whether or not the machines were reliable, and since that was being done in another way, that should be sufficient. At least I think that's what he said.
And so basically, Mr. Hursty, the test that Bruce McPherson said would occur has not occurred and won't occur. Because what, the federal government's private testing agencies are doing all that kind of work, allegedly?
That's apparently so. But the interesting thing to me was that I couldn't get him to just say, no, we're not going to do it.
Yeah.
And I think that's the answer. I believe that's the answer.
It's interesting. I get the sense from all of these guys who are dealing and reading about the coverage of your hearings, Senator, and congratulations, by the way. It sounded like they were great hearings, and I'm delighted to see that they actually got covered by a lot of media around the state. I don't know why that would be. They've been ignoring these matters for so long, but I was delighted to see them cover it, and in the bargain, it looks like a lot of these officials, and you can, I'd love it if you gave me your impression, but it looks like a lot of these registrars, these voting officials around the country are they just covering their butts at this point because they don't really know what the heck is going on? There was one person, if this report was correct, Debbie Hench, the San Joaquin County registrar, said that these meetings are tearing the voters' confidence apart.
Yes.
Did she really say that?
Yes, she really said that. I actually just at that point had to disagree. I mean, I think that there's no way you can reassure voters that their votes will be counted unless you're willing to actually let people look at what's going on and be a part of the test results and see what's happening.
Hear, hear.
And the idea that you would just say to people, that you would say, as the undersecretary did, well, we didn't want to put out this information about the problems with the ES&S machines registering things wrong, supposedly because voters had long fingernails, because it would be unduly alarming, and we wanted to have answers before we put out any information like that about flaws in the...
Maybe they were worried about the false fingernail lobby, do you think?
I don't know. That was one of those several points during the hearing where I was so astonished that it was hard for me to think of what to ask next.
Well, one of your colleagues on that committee, Jim Batten from Riverside, a Republican who was there just briefly because he had such an impacted schedule he couldn't stay, he seemed, for the record, to almost be saying, I can't believe anybody's concerned about this. In Riverside County, we have electronic voting, and it's just hunky-dory.
Yeah. Well, you know, someone after the hearing said to me, you know, they used leeches for several hundred years, too.
Senator, I know that you're familiar because you've been, as I said, a champion of these causes for some time, but were you surprised at the reaction that you got from some of the registrars, or was there anything at this that came out in this hearing and these hearings that you hadn't previously known that he caught even you off guard?
No, there were things that caught me off guard. There were a number of things. The idea that the paper trail, the voter verified paper audit trail, when there's a direct recording machine, is required to be made available to blind and visually impaired voters by means of a mechanism that reads back the ballot. And I learned on Wednesday that in at least one county that the plan is for that readback to come directly from the voting machine rather than from the voter verified paper audit trail that is mandatory in California law. I don't believe that's legal, and I had no idea that anyone was contemplating doing that. It basically means that if you're a blind or visually impaired voter voting on one of those machines, you won't be able to verify how your ballot's going to be cast.
So in other words, if I understand that correctly, you're saying then that people, that a blind voter will come in, place their vote, the machine will print out one thing on the ballot and could either record it or simply read it back to them in a completely different way from what is actually on that piece of paper.
That's right. The machine is going to read back what's in the machine rather than what's on the piece of paper. And the whole idea about having a voter-verified paper trail is to prevent either a mistake in the programming, and we've seen a lot of mistakes, particularly when it comes to our primary system, which is complicated, and to voters who are voting in a language other than English, or to prevent a very common programming problem or programming challenge, which is to have somebody program the machine to record one thing but to print something else out. Very simple to do. Any programmer could do that.
Senator, did the VotePad come up? This new device which has no moving parts, which apparently disabled voters seem to love, and it doesn't even require federal certification because it has no moving parts. And by the way, I hear it's about one-tenth of the cost of these electronic voting machines. Has that come up in Sacramento or elsewhere that you know of as a viable option to meet the HABA requirements for disabled voters?
I saw the VotePad in person for the first time at this hearing, although I have been aware of it. I believe that Yolo County, which is where Davis is planning to use the VotePad. But there is now apparently some contention about whether or not the VotePad is a voter assistive device, which would not need certification, or a voting system. And I think you will see some of the voting system manufacturers arguing that the VotePad is a system that requires certification and therefore may not be used.
You mean the voting machine vendors will be making that argument?
Yes, because if the VotePad can be used without certification, guess what doesn't have to be used? The electronic voting machine.
Right.
So, Senator, one of the interesting questions here, I was so pleased to watch you probe the Secretary of State's lawyers and spokespeople about all of this. It seems that they have sort of created the illusion that there are drop-dead deadlines for vendors to submit completed applications, to have testing done, because their argument is the various registrars in our many counties in California have to know what systems are going to be used for the June primary, so they have enough time to get these systems up and running, et cetera. And yet, through your questions, I was left with a sense that those deadlines really weren't so absolute, no matter what they offered on that point.
Well, I have some sympathy with the registrars. They really do need time to plan how they're going to have people voting.
Yeah.
And if they're using a method, even if it's the VotePad, that hasn't been used before, poll workers have to be trained, they need to order equipment, they need to make sure ballots are printed. So there's a lot that goes into actually running elections, and I don't want to take away from the registrars, who I think have a difficult job to do when the rules keep changing. But the deadlines are not, they're sort of 1985. Four language deadlines. It didn't exist at all until I called the hearing to ask about how we were doing. And then when I asked what they meant, what does it mean that you have to have your system certified by January 31st and the application in by the 20th, I was told, well, of course, we can't make the vendors meet those deadlines, and anybody who submits anything after those deadlines, well, of course, we'll consider it. So
it speaks for itself. What do you think is going to happen? Because I have sympathy with the registrars as well. We want them to have good, solid systems in place that they can teach their precinct workers how to operate so the whole thing runs flawlessly. The goal here being for all Californians to have systems that they can rely on as being fair and accurate and absolute. What do you think is going to happen? I know you've called for some 2 days of open source voting hearings as well, I believe in March. What is your sense of this mess and how it's going to shake down for June?
The biggest challenge is going to be this year because the testing and the certification and the possibilities of using open source software, of course, are you have greater possibilities when you're talking about 2008 elections. The big challenge is in 2006. Some counties are going to do fine. It's very clear. They have backup plans. They have a mechanism for dealing with the other counties. I don't know what they're going to do, and they have all their eggs in one basket. Counties can go back to using paper ballots, but they will have to deal with the need to allow disabled voters to vote without assistance, and that's one of the reasons the vote pad is so interesting. If that works, it would allow counties to go back to a paper ballot system and to use the vote pad.
Senator Bowen, has there been any comment on behalf of the governor? I know that Mr. McPherson is his hand-chosen person to run that office, but has the governor expressed any interest in this and in clarifying these issues and assuring the people of California that these systems are indeed fully tested and, in other words, to assure them that their votes are going to be accurately counted?
You know, the governor's office has had no input on this. The only input, and I credit your listeners and everybody who emailed and faxed and lobbied the governor's office last year, was to get SB 370 signed into law so that the voter-verified paper audit trail will be used to audit the electronic voting equipment when we do the California, the mandatory 1% audit.
Right.
So the governor signed that into law over the opposition of the Secretary of State. And one of the discussions that we had at the hearing was about that 1% audit, because we heard again from the undersecretary that the paper is not a legal ballot. The paper trail is not a legal ballot, and all the problems that have been raised with the paper.
You troublemaker, Senator Bowen, calling for a paper trail. How dare you?
I don't know if you saw it, but the Pacific Research Institute put out a brief saying that it was ridiculous for me to call for a paper, to use the paper, voter-verified paper trail audit, and that people should just expect their computers to be covered in paper when they go to the polling place.
How ridiculous.
They are amongst the worst of these AstroTurf organizations out there who are obviously being working on behalf of the voting vendors and so forth. Senator Bowen, if I could ask, you know that we're big fans of yours over at bradblog.com, as you know. But whenever I write about you, I get folks' emails, comments from folks who wonder, can you run for Secretary of State this year, given the mess that we have and given the fact that, I guess, Bruce McPherson will be running his own election in a way?
Mm-hmm.
Can you get a fair election given the mess that's going on?
We don't know.
You know, that's a really good question. It had actually never occurred to me until Wednesday. the very registrars who I'm asking be responsible for certifying the votes in the counties where I'm on the ballot.
There's that Bowen woman on there. See, there she is.
Yeah, there's that, and actually the other question that I'm wondering about is if you win, or shall I say when you win, presuming the machines don't go the other way, is this mess clean upable at this point? Is there... Can you, as Secretary of State, actually do what McPherson apparently can't and clean this up so that we have a golden state once again with clean elections that, you know, can be the envy of the country?
It's absolutely doable. And the key to all of this is transparency. It's to allow verification and transparency and auditability of every step of the process, to create a mechanism for handling the ballots, for auditing whatever voting system is used, for recounting where everyone can observe it. And ultimately, I think we have to move to a system where the software is not proprietary, where the software is not owned by a private company. It is in the commons. And that's the reason that the Pacific Research Institute, I think, had such trouble with me, is that I'm arguing against privately owned software for elections. I'm arguing that we should have publicly accessible, publicly viewable, open source software.
And thus your call for 2 days of hearings on the whole question of open source voting.
And we will also be doing a day of hearings on the independent testing authorities because if you take a look, you'll see that Professor Avi Rubin, who heads the National Science Foundation's Accurate Project dealing with electronic voting, has written that he doesn't believe that you can test an electronic voting machine by testing the software for many of the things that could happen. That it's a difficult challenge for a programmer to find something that another clever programmer has written into the program, and that many of the things that happen, the memory card hack, if you have software, certain kinds of software with what's called interpreter code, you wouldn't necessarily see that. And just as an example, because it's hard for people to get this, let me tell you a way that I learned that somebody could hack one of the old lever voting machines and have no evidence of it. All you have to do is stick a pencil in the lever mechanism for the one candidate who you want to have register fewer votes. The gear won't turn fully because of the pencil lead. But over the course of the day, the pencil lead will be worn away, and anyone who examines that lever voting machine at the close of voting will see no evidence that the machine was hacked. And the same kind of thing can happen with computer code. What we're dealing with is the equivalent of a pencil lead in the software. And you cannot see that by looking at it either before the election starts or after the election closes.
And actually, to amplify on that point, you can stick a pencil in a lever machine, as she suggests, and end up hacking one machine. However, you can hack the tabulators for an entire county and in one fell swoop flip an entire election, not just a single machine.
We have just 2 minutes left, and I want to ask both of you from your unique perspectives of really paying attention to all this stuff, and I salute you both for being great Americans and great Californians. How do we convince the public that even though this on its face may appear too complicated for your average bear, that no matter what their partisan affiliation or lack of partisan affiliation, it's not a partisan issue. This is something that every voter needs to pay attention to and demand that the appropriate fixes be in place.
Well, I think the public is convinced. The fact that 48% of voters in this country don't have confidence that their votes will be counted as cast tells me that this is not a partisan issue, and it's not a conspiracy theorist issue. People out there are concerned about the kinds of things they saw in Florida and Ohio.
Brad?
And well, I'll say it's the delinquency of the media, frankly. And I agree with the senator that Americans do now understand what's at stake, but they must be the ones to continue making noise both with the media, who ignores it, and the politicians, who are quite frequently, you know, being paid off by companies like Diebold, lobbyists, and so forth. And too often, the media does not report anything unless the politicians tell them to. So American citizens need to take this into their own hands, yell and scream from the highest rooftops, and they will get changed. We're already starting to see it, but they need to keep working.
Absolutely. I want to thank both of you so very much, Senator Deborah Bowen, a Democrat from Redondo Beach, who is the chair of the Senate Elections and Reapportionment Committee. Am I right in saying that?
That's close enough for government work.
Fine. Thank you. Thank you so much. And go to her website. Just Google Deborah Bowen. Boom. You will find her website. She will update you with all the information about this from our California perspective. And anybody who cares about this issue, he's one of the best guests I had on my show, and I knew that before I ever even had him on my show. Thank you, Brad Friedman, so much for your work. Both of you, don't stop. We got your back.
Thank you.
Thank you, Brad.
Christine. You're great.
Bye. All right. That was State Senator Deborah Bowen and Brad Friedman of bradblog.com. Check it out. Get educated. Don't let them take your freedoms away right here at home. You're listening to the all-new Talk City, 1240 AM.